This is Radio Freeman. Does the revolution have to be bloody? Do we have to seek out the villains that have been controlling us and hang them from the rafters? Or can we simply alter things by changing our minds, changing our very reason of existence? Those that are seeking the hard data, those that are seeking the specifications and the outlines of how we've been manipulated into this place, are not looking forward, they're looking back. They are seeking to identify an enemy and then eradicate it. I believe that the true path that we should follow is to be looking into the future. Certainly looking at where we're at right now is critical in understanding how we are so messed up. And really the idea of gathering the data on our reality manufacturers, well, it just gives us the excuse, the ability to walk away from them. We're not trying to identify these reality manufacturers so that we could go then hang them from the rafters. And certainly a bloody revolution is not what I hope to have in the future. But the future, now this is something that is a very interesting dilemma. Because certainly I live on a planet that has an entirely different future than the future proposed by those around me. Now let's just take my current course of study. I am preparing for this season's shows. I'm very excited about the Freeman Perspective this season, and hopefully I can entice you with a little bit of the tidbits of knowledge that I've been gleaning from the works of the guests that I will have on the show. Because right now I'm reading The Return of Planet X. And it's Dr. Jason Rand. He will be on the show to discuss the idea of catastrophism. Now here's a future that nobody's taken into consideration, except for perhaps the Brotherhoods. You gotta wonder why our government's all going underground. Why they built Command Central for Y2K. Obviously it wasn't built for its stated purpose because it wasn't used in 911. Refer to my earlier shows if you want some more details on Command Central, which is a deep underground military base. So here we've got our government all going underground, getting preparations ready. We're watching as the Earth starts to go into a frenzy. The sun is erupting on a massive scale, unrecorded in the whole written history of humanity. And, the lands are burning, the seas are flowing, tsunamis, earthquakes, unprecedented storms. I mean, how many times does the weatherman have to say, well, we haven't seen this before? I constantly found humor in this. And a little tidbit, just something I picked up along the way, is as I was focusing on the solar eruptions, I was being able to predict massive, what they started to term superstorms. I was able to predict their arrival by watching the coronal mass ejections on the SOHO satellite, and then determining whether they were actually coming towards the planet or heading away or in some opposite direction, some other direction. And as I would watch and I would see one coming our way, because SOHO will give you all this data, I was predicting these superstorms. I was like, well, 3 days, there's going to be a major superstorm. And sure enough, 3 days later, there'll be a major superstorm. And it seemed to take that amount of time for the solar radiation to affect the ionosphere to cause these massive storms. Now, every time, and this is every single time that I would announce that there was going to be another major superstorm or at least a massive storm of some sort due to the influx of radiation from these coronal mass ejections, the news would come up and go, well, El Nino has struck again. And I was like, those lying sons of bitches, because they are totally lying to you. Now, what if this whole Y2K scenario was actually crafted to bring about their ability to build things to save themselves? Okay, so what I'm saying is that they put forth this whole idea of computer meltdown, so we must prepare. You know, global economies are going to crash, people are going to run wild in the streets, so we need billions of dollars, and we're going to build Command Central and all these deep underground military bases so that we can survive this. And so we paid for it, right? The American public paid for it. What if all of that preparation was for a later date and not for the Y2K crash, which I don't think anybody ever really believed in? And what if the symbolism that we saw in the Y2K celebration was actually reference to these ancient cataclysms? What if the burning of the Acropolis was in honor of when Greece burnt due to the last arrival of Planet X? Now, we'll get into what Planet X just might be in here in a second. But there is absolutely a bona fide collection of catastrophism works from many, numerous, almost all ancient cultures. They all saw a celestial object followed by earthquakes, floods, fires, raining stone, and earthquakes. Certainly, this has been recorded numerous times by different races across the globe. It's not just the Bible's version of the flood, but there's everybody else's version of the flood as well. And some of the ancient, very ancient cultures discuss how this has happened numerous times. So now if we look at this Y2K celebration and their seeming solar worship, right? as the river Thames in England was burnt to the speed of the sun as it traverses in the sky from Earth, as viewed from Earth. And they burnt the river Styx, or the river Thames, to the speed of the sun. But when it gets even more interesting is when we got over here to the West. Now, of course, in Egypt, they were working on capping the Great Pyramid with gold as Jean-Michel Jarre played the 12 Dreams of the Sun, sticking with the astrological solar symbolism. And then in America, after we ignited our phallus, the Washington Monument, Bill Clinton gets up, announces that it is a rising sun, and then they have lights burst out from behind from the west. And it made it appear as if the sun was rising in the west. Now, this is another thing that is told in catastrophe history, as the Incans, or I'm sorry, the Mayans and the Egyptians both discuss, and the Hebrews discuss a time when the sun either stood still or rose where it set and set where it rose. In other words, there seems to have been a polar shift on planet Earth. Now, when these shifts occur, most think that it would be the entire outer crust, not like a plate tectonic thing, but the entire outer crust, which is floating on a river of magma, actually slips, and therefore the entire, every continent, the entire globe shifts. And I actually had a vivid dream of this, and it was really intriguing for me because seeing it from a first person perspective is totally different than imagining the world slipping. Now consider that we are rotating at 1,100 miles an hour while orbiting around the sun at 66,600 miles per hour. Now, if there were a planet X, now, all right, let's go ahead and outline planet X because there is much confusion. Most evidence suggests that what we call planet X is not a planet at all, but more likely a brown dwarf star. Now, when NASA spotted it back in the early 80s, they didn't really know what it was because we didn't really have classifications of brown dwarf stars. It took many more years before we could actually discuss or identify this object. Now, I myself, I remember in the 80s when it was news. I remember the newscasters talking about Planet X and how how NASA and JPL had determined that there was another body in our solar system and that it had a massive gravitational field. Now, they were saying that this gravitational field suggested it was perhaps three times the size of Jupiter. Now, this does not mean that the planet has to be three times the size of Jupiter, but its density is equivalent. You know, the mass equals the gravitational flux. So it could be a super dense item and not be so large and still have, because what they're doing is detecting warps in the orbits of the outer planets or even in the light bands from distant stars, and they can determine a mass by the gravitational fluctuation in the light rays. So, to determine its size is different than determining its mass, right? So, we're saying that it's as massive as Jupiter and perhaps three times the size of Jupiter. Now, this large brown dwarf star is in a large elliptical orbit, seeming to last 3,600 to 4,000 years. And when it does pass, it doesn't necessarily have to cause a major earth-shattering catastrophe. There's only been certain numerous times, four in the recorded histories of, say, the Hindus or the Hopis, that it has caused global catastrophe. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to come to a point where it actually causes such a devastating massive catastrophe, but yet there will always be catastrophe. As this gravitational field comes into our solar system, it's absolutely going to draw the sun out and cause more coronal mass ejections, as like what is going on, which will cause extra radiation in the ionosphere, which causes more storms. You know, it's a totally connected system. So now here we have NASA announcing this this Planet X, and then completely shutting up about it altogether. They didn't bring it up anymore after that. But those of us that were watching were still curious. And then, of course, there's the whole works of Zechariah Sitchin that get into to Nibiru and Planet X, and most have now started to call this thing Nibiru. The Bible seems to have called it Wormwood in the book of Revelation. And what we find is that all across the globe, numerous nationalities, numerous people have announced this comet, and you generally described as blood red or red, and coming into the solar system bringing ultimate destruction. It has been considered a dragon and has many different been classified by different groups in different ways, but always the same outcome, always the arrival of this celestial body, always the earthquakes, floods, storms, and fires, and then massive catastrophe. Now, there are lots of evidence for a crustal shift, for a pole shift, and I was getting to my dream of this. It was quite amazing to see it from a first-person's perspective, because as we're rotating at 1,100 miles an hour, say a gravitational field came into contact with Earth. Now, say this only slowed it down by 100 miles an hour. Well, imagine what would happen if you slid a bowl away from you filled with water. That water all comes toppling over the edge. If our Earth was to very rapidly slow, like a hiccup, even 100 miles an hour, everything would continue traveling at that extra 100 miles an hour. But yet, anything that's bolted down wouldn't. It would stay at the rate the Earth was rotating. So imagine now you're sitting in a room and a crustal shift occurs. What it will appear like for you, because your chair, your body will remain in that same space, but the walls will come flying at you, or at least it would appear so from your own perspective. And this is what I saw in my lucid dream. Very interesting. Anything that's not bolted down will continue traveling in the same rate, right? So trees would appear to come flying at you, or away from you, depending. Very curious. So there is no reason not to think that this is possible, and absolutely all kinds of explanations from different cultures over time to give us good reason to think that it will occur. So what are we thinking about when we're thinking about the future? Are we thinking about the fact that we are not in the same space that we were 5 minutes ago? Are we thinking about the fact that we are rotating around a galactic center while orbiting around a sun, while it orbits around the other masses in the solar system? You know, I keep a picture with me at all times. I always have this with me, and I think I'll use it on my show with Jason, Dr. Rand. And that is a galaxy running into another galaxy. Now, if that's not something to keep you in the here and now, I don't know what is. I mean, if you can get hit by a galaxy, everything's out the window. And personally, I feel that catastrophism, or at least the idea of it, is a good thing, because it puts you now. So many people are living in their futures, and that's where you lose your hair, you see, when you're into future think, and you're busy going, oh, well, I've got to do this, I've got to do that and the other, because I've got this plan, and I'm going to make it to the end, and I'm going to be something when I'm done. Now, that doesn't exist in my world, and according to Dr. Jason Rand, we've only got 2 years left, And from what I see from the government's positioning, from their very movements of going underground and getting things prepped, I don't think we have much time. And I keep saying this to you guys. But even if we do, the idea that we don't actually helps, because then you move into the here and now, and all of these future considerations are null and void. Now, I have currently been placed around more people recently that are not into this type of knowledge whatsoever. People I'm talking to don't have any idea who Freeman is, and they don't really care, it seems. And yet, they come to me, and they one of my favorite questions from them was, well, what do you do? Because everybody's often curious as to why I don't go to work every day. Hell, you know, I work more than them, probably, I don't know, but I work for free, so it doesn't count, right? And what I get so often is somebody coming to me and saying, oh, you know, I suffered so hard, I suffered all day long, I had to do this, that, and the other, I had to get up this morning, and I had to do this, and just look at you, what do you do, you know? If I gotta suffer, you gotta suffer. We can't have all this non-suffering stuff going on. Well, where would the world be if we didn't suffer? And then I ask, well, what is it that you do want to create? I don't know. I don't really know what I'm trying to create here. I just want to be able to buy me a stereo next month, you know? Oh, I see. So you don't live in a reality, right? I mean, it's like they think I live off of the edge somewhere and in some surreality, when I find it quite the opposite, that all these people with their future goals are the ones that live in the delusion, and I actually live in reality. You know, when I watch, the ambassador of the extraterrestrial God speaking before Congress, or when I about cloning humans, or if I watch these weathercasters as they're going, well, this has never happened before. Well, hell, that hurricane just did a loop-de-loop. As I watch them announce the use of HAARP, and it's many effects that I've witnessed, of course, not provable, you know, it just happens that all the power went out in the southwestern states the moment they turned it on. You know, I can't tell you that it was HAARP's fault, just really a coincidence, right? But hell, you know, who's living on planet Earth here? Yeah, I think our president is the grandson of Aleister Crowley. Yeah, I think that there's extraterrestrials involved in our government. Yeah, I feel that we're in the midst of a major cataclysm. And yeah, I don't think you have the future that you think you have. Now, I have all this data. I have tons and tons, stacks and stacks of data to make me believe what I believe. Where is yours? Okay, you tell me you're an American. Why? You tell me you're a Christian. Who told you so? I want to know these things. I want to know. What if the solution is far more simple than we had thought? What if the answers are right there, inside each and every one of us? What if these ruling elites, government, and religion are simply there to keep us working for their agenda? Tribal cultures didn't self-destruct. Tribal cultures lasted for millennia without the written word, without the powers of the reality manufacturers determining their lifestyle. You throw catastrophism into the mix, and the story becomes even more convoluted. So we find that these political leaders and the mechanizations going on are actually self-serving for a group that is not us. Thank you. How many of you believe you're going to be in a deep underground military base when the tsunami comes? How many of you believe that FEMA is going to be right there to back you when your house gets wiped out? How many believe that Dick Cheney is out for your benefit? I want to know. Now everybody is conditioned to understand that the Brotherhood, this hierarchy of the agenda, are trying to bring about a global catastrophe, or at least the appearance of one, in order to unify their force. Could this be the case? Is it all for show? I seriously doubt it. It was absolutely curious as Ronald Reagan went around to the UN and other places saying, wouldn't it be great if there was some extraterrestrial force coming to attack us that would unite humanity? Is that what we need? The movies today, Hollywood, like Fight Club, Saw, V for Vendetta, want to tell you that you have no lust for life. They want to tell you that you might as well die. If you're not going to die, then start to live. They tell you that you have no concern for your life. That you're just a useless, selfish eater. And that perhaps if somebody put a gun to your head, you might start living. Is this the truth? Do we have no appreciation of life? And if we don't, is it only found at the end of a torturer's rod? Catastrophism hasn't been my only study this month because, well, I have Stuart Swerdlow coming on the air as well. Now, this man's truly curious. The skeptic would never believe a word he says. But I happen to know that a skeptic most likely won't believe the words I have to say. And certainly in a world where a giant flying boomerang flies over my head, or a giant flying rectangle hangs out over the ocean, or green fireballs are going over my head while I'm hanging out with a woman who met Christ and is carrying the Holy Grail, I think there's going to be some skepticism. So as we start to witness the fact that we're moving into this cataclysm, I think this will become more and more an accepted norm. And there will still be those fighting on whether or not this is just a Brotherhood manipulation to further their agenda. I would say that that would be a likely case if it weren't for all of their positioning, if it weren't for all of their building. They're going underground for some reason, right? Well, Stuart Swerdlow gives us the exopolitical aspect. Very interesting. Now consider, this is a man who has the memory of being transported back in time to get a blood sample from Jesus Christ to be brought to Mars to clone an Antichrist. That's just one story of Seward's. Looking into his ideas on reality have really made me question a number of things because, well, he was one that was used as a vessel in the Illuminati rituals. He was involved in government projects that dealt with mind control and time travel. Now, he goes ahead to say that he's in connection with people from a planet named Coombe, which is in the Sirius system. And I'm always amazed at how many people we find talking about the Sirians. Now, as we start to move into these cataclysms, as the world begins to burn and the earthquakes are heaving and the tsunamis are coming, and this is all happening around us, but everybody just, you know, that's on the TV. That has nothing to do with us. As these things are occurring, at the same time, we're getting all these arrivals. We're having these influx of extraterrestrial craft. And certainly, whatever it was that Space Shuttle 75, or the Columbia Space Shuttle, videotaped during the Tether experiment, these craft that David Sereda used to help define his hyperdimensional physics, these craft that seem to be returning from ancient times, being that there are ancient stones that depict them as well. Could it be that this is also part of this storyline? Is there simply a blue beam? Is there this force that is coming simply as a delusion? Could it be that this is just a government conspiracy once again to unify their force? Or are there really extraterrestrial races coming? Are they already here? Now, if you ask me, if it were to be a false invasion, it would be a false invasion perpetrated by the extraterrestrials that already live here. Could it be that we might escape? Did you come here to escape? Was that your point and purpose of incarnating on planet Earth, was simply to escape all the turmoil? Hell no, you wouldn't have incarnated at this point. No doubt about that. We're here now and we've got to deal with this issue. But as I watch everyone just talking about their day-to-day crap, the political mechanizations, the getting back to a republic, the ideals of these overlords wanting to be reestablished. I mean, certainly I don't want the Christians nor the Satans to win, you know? I'm not ready for any of these hierarchy beings to be in place. You know, I am self-regulating. I know good from bad, and I know that I won't harm a thing. And I know that most people on this planet are the same. We do not seek to harm others. We have to be mind-controlled to do so. See that time and time again. So it's as we move into this time of peril, and that is what's coming, as things start to become more calamitous. I mean, look about, people, come on. I mean, the planet's burning. If it's not burning, it's underwater. We're in trouble, and this isn't going to just pass. This is just the beginning. This is not a message to bring about fear, because we are here, and there's nothing you can do about that. And once you accept that you're eternal, the fear goes away. But it is a message about change. It is a message about existing in the here and now as opposed to the future. It is a message that has come. Its time is here. Now, they don't want us thinking about such thoughts because they expect chaos and rampage in the streets. But I have more faith in you than that. Now, certainly, it's going to come like a thief in the night, it appears, and especially since nobody's heeding the warning signs. And, well, what do we have? What do we have? Us, the common folk. We're not building deep underground military bases. We're not trying to survive massive tsunamis and earthquakes and polar shifts because, one, well, we don't know they're coming, and two, we absolutely don't have the resources to do so. I got into a big debate with a friend at the coffee shop when he was saying, well, you know, I'd want to have a bunch of gold in my pocket and silver. I was like, yeah, that's great. Rocks in your pocket to weight you down when the water comes. I told him you'd be far better off, even though the weight might be similar, to be carrying around bottles of alcohol. Because, well, I think a bottle of Jack Daniels is going to have a whole lot more value than a piece of rock, such as gold or silver. He says, but no, gold has value. And I said, what value? There's no value to gold except for what's in your head. Unless you want to build computers or technology, then it has a value. But any other value has just been constructed. Gold has no value, it's a rock. It's valuable for technology, but as far as anything else, it's a rock, you know? And if you're in the middle of a catastrophe, you're not going to be wanting a bunch of rocks. You're going to say, no, give me your food, give me your alcohol. You know, let me survive. He says, but what after the catastrophe? Then you'll need gold. I'm like, man, you need to get over this gold kick for sure. Why on earth would anybody want this rock? I state that not lightly either. You know, why on earth would you want this rock? Because on earth, it's completely unnecessary. But for a high technological race, oh yeah, you need gold. You need silver. You need precious stones. Quartz crystal. All of these things for technology. But to take them and store them into a vault somewhere and say that you own something of value is ridiculous. It has no value. All that's going to do is bring you down when the tsunami hits. I'd like to see you run with all that gold. So what does have value? Well, foodstuffs, of course, and all of these things, but if you're in the middle of a catastrophe and you got 600 pounds, which is what he was talking about purchasing, 600 pounds of beans and rice and dried vegetables, well, how do you expect to bring that with you? It's just not going to happen. Any sort of preparation that you're taking, besides building a multi-billion dollar deep underground military base, although that still doesn't grant you, it's not necessarily going to save your life. What do you have? What can you do? And this is when the idea of synchronicity steps in. And I would even state it as, well, your faith in God is far superior to any item you might contain, any item you might have. Now, of course, when you state things in such a religious fashion, you can just watch the ears turn off. Now, of course, I have many, many years of following this guided path, this miraculous life that I've been leading and outlining for you guys so that you can see. And, of course, all of you write me and tell me of your guided path, and I find it all so wonderful. The second I stated it as such a thing as having faith in God, immediately I just felt the walls go up, and it's like, well, you know, these are the English terms I have to use for this concept. I can tell you to have faith in your synchronicities, or that you have a guardian angel watching over you, and that actually if you put your faith in the right place, if your intention in your heart is in the right place, then the right events will happen to you because your thoughts form your reality. So all those people that were telling me, well, you know, I gotta suffer, you have to suffer, I can't sit around here and let you just lollygag and not suffer, are creating their own suffering. And of course they glorify themselves in this suffering because they've been trained that suffering is merit. So if they don't come home and complain about their horrible day, then their day was worthless, right? I'm hell for people like that. Because I really don't get into all the anger and complaining. I see no point in it. So they want me to, of course, engage in this aggression. And I just don't go there. I was like, don't do it. Well, how can I not do it? How can I possibly not do it? I have to get up in the morning. Now, certainly when you've got a family and whatnot, your choices are a bit more limited. If you've gotten yourself into major debt, then your choices are extremely limited. But if you're still a bachelor soul like the people that I've been talking to, then you do have options. It's just you don't recognize them. So once you get out and you start on your path and you start to get moved into your divine passage, where you belong in life, then things just start falling into place. If you start to try and define and outline this as such, then well, a lot of times you'll get lost on your path. But if you're continuously grateful, it continues. And there are times when your faith is tested. But always those miracles are even the more beautiful. Because once again, we do have trouble with appreciation. And there's no doubt about that. It's been inbred into us, you know, especially Americans. So we don't have this appreciation of life. And we think that we should manipulate, control everything. And their solution to you is go get some mind control. Oh, you're not appreciating life? Well, here, we'll torture you for a little while. You like life yet? Oh, let's drown you, and torture you, burn you. All right, so you're liking life yet? Yes, yes, I'm glad to be alive. And maybe that's what it takes. Certainly nothing brings people together like a good catastrophe. So, you know, bring it on, whatever. We're all going to get through this. Well, maybe not all of us, but that's okay too, because life is just a moment. It's not everything. This mere incarnation that we're in is important, but it's not the only one. You will go on. Have faith in that. You have mighty forces that will come to your aid, as Jack Blood says. Be bold, and mighty forces will come to your aid. I agree with this. Go ahead and step up. Disagree. I'm all for it. But if you're seeking to have a violent end, a violent revolution, if you're seeking to eradicate the New World Order, if you're seeking to find your vengeance and justice, then that's what you're going to get, is blood. But if you want to find a new world, if you want a new life, then you have to give up all these egotistical, selfish mechanizations that have been planted within you and give yourself over to the divine will. Yeah, this is where I find within the good magic and bad magic philosophies as far as the definition of this would go. Because the evil magicians want to manipulate everything. And I would classify these as the Freemasons or the Rosicrucians or even the, you know, the OTO, groups like this that are doing magic in order to fulfill an egotistical dream, in order to fill a selfish dream. Now, I've read Ayn Rand. I love The Fountainhead. I love Atlas Shrugged. These are wonderful books, and it certainly got me to questioning the idea of selfishness. And I was all for it, really, as I read them. That, yeah, you know, of course we act out of selfishness. This only makes sense. But then I became a little more enlightened, I think, and I started moving into selflessness, and I found that the self needs were fulfilled by doing selfless deeds. And I didn't expect this because, you know, we're trained to think in linear patterns. We're trained to think in cause and effect. And this just isn't the case. This is not the way the world works, as much as we believe it does. Yeah, you drop a pen, it falls to the floor. This is not the nature of the universe. This is merely one simple aspect of it. Cause and effect is not necessarily thought out. So here you are doing a selfless deed, and next thing you know, this person led you to another person that had exactly what you needed, or something to that effect. You know, you're doing a selfless deed for someone, but it ends up having a selfish, or at least a positive, personal effect for you. Maybe something you didn't even know you needed, right? So as we start to move into these days of catastrophe, as we start to get more and more news of cities burning down, and as terrorism strikes the hearts with fear, as all of these things continue to come at us as the Brotherhood is emitting their ultimate mind control wave patterns, hitting us with all this trauma. We have to stay within our center. We cannot be driven to this aggression. We cannot be driven to seek justice. Justice is the past, my friends. Justice is living in the ancient past. In the here and now, we have nothing but us, and we can take that first step forward without ever considering the incidents that have happened to us in the past. As I say, the only reason I can see to understand the past and to understand the Brotherhood is to have a separation, to have the ability to walk away from what everyone seems to think is reality. Now, they have been incorporating sacred numerological, astrological, astronomical concepts into their building structures and into their mythologies so that these ideas will remain alive throughout time. They have incorporated ideas into the pyramids. They have incorporated ideas into Chartres Cathedral. They have incorporated ideas in the Cross of Hende. And these ideas are from the ancient past, these knowledge that has been passed up from at least the ancient Egyptians, but actually before, of an astronomical event that occurs on distant scales. So all knowledge of the past occurrence is eradicated by the time the next one occurs. Because when we're talking global catastrophe, we're talking about the elimination of knowledge. And so then those that survive, and there's always been survivors, they rise back up and they have their stories, they have their knowledge, they even have the idea of how to make a battery, but they no longer have a Duracell factory. This is what I see coming in this great catastrophe, and I watch as these occult orders, the Freemasons, the Mormons, I think even the Theosophists have a deep underground military bases to salvage and save their knowledge so that when they rise back to the surface, when the waters subside, when the dust cloud clears, they can rise back up and be the gods of those unfortunate souls that survived. Well, that is one important reason to study the Brotherhood, so that if you are one of those remnant survivors, you might be able to forewarn the next civilization that comes about. And perhaps that's what all of this has been about, to tell us a story from the ancient past of great cataclysms that come and have no memory, nothing left for the humans of planet Earth to know that it was here, except for stories, ancient stories. Well, I started a couple of thoughts on this web stream and lost them. Of course, I introduced Stuart and then never really got into his belief system. But really, I just wanted to share with you my thoughts as they are today, whatever day this may be, because I don't do space-time. And get us all thinking about these type of things, because it's being ignored. This catastrophism is being ignored. People don't want to think about that. They don't want to believe that. They want to think about, well, how long is it going to be till I can afford that plasma screen television? People aren't thinking in galactic scales. They're not considering the idea that we might get impaled by another galaxy. No. They're thinking in this localized future that has been manufactured for them to think within. And they're adamant about it. And this is most everybody in America, I don't know about the rest of the world. I haven't really got to talk with them a whole lot. I'm telling you that catastrophism, the concept of it, is not a bad thing. Because once again, it keeps you in the here and now. And as I've been pointing out time and again, this concept that we have that we call progress, well, what's it for? I want to know. And those that believe that without some jackbooted thud whipping us that we won't ever create anything and we'll just go and live in the caves, that's ridiculous as well. Humans create, that's what we do. Speaking of which, I like to step into the beauty every now and again. You know, I don't only focus on the Brotherhood agenda. And so I'd like to share with you something that I created this weekend as I went out and escaped a little. And I watched this fine fire troupe, Sangre del Sol, and I created a video for them. That was my weekend project. I just love doing this. And of course, I'm not getting paid for it, and that's another thing. It's what brought this up, is that here I spent 10 hours creating that video for them, and I'm not looking for anything in return. I just wanted to create. I mean, my God, they were beautiful. The fire was beautiful. The film came out awesome, and so I wanted to do something with it, and I didn't even know I was going to be doing it. I didn't go down there to film them. I didn't know what was going on. I was just at the coffee shop, and it just happened. But anyway, if you go to Google Video and check out Sangre del Sol, well, mine's about the last one on the list, so I guess I didn't realize they had so many videos. You could put Blue Fly Productions in there. That's my production company, and then you'll find that one. So Sangre del Sol and Blue Fly Productions, I'd like to share that with all of you because it's just beautiful. And we can't forget this, you know, and all of this time that we're discussing the hurting, we're discussing the barrage of these people on the planet, often the beauty that exists around us gets put into the shadow and forgotten. And I don't ever want to forget the beauty that is humanity, because you guys are awesome. You know, and all of us are. We all are beautiful creators, and we are co-creators of our reality. And if we are to focus onto this, and perhaps it would be our very morphogenic field that would create a positive outcome from this catastrophe. Perhaps the catastrophe will even be lessened by the fact that we're generating positive intention. Hey, stranger things have happened. So, you know, if you want to know what's valuable at this point, it's your friends. It's your friends and family and your community. And that's where we need to start. That's where everything begins. The tribe does work. It's self-regulating. It will exist, and people will continue to create. We may be facing great peril, but the government's not there to help you with this. I think Katrina says it all. It should, anyway. So start to let this leak into your consciousness. You know, I know it's a difficult one to think about because, well, who wants to know the world is coming to an end? Or at least that there's going to be some massive global catastrophe. Who wants to think about that? Well, take it to its positive aspect and realize that that brings you into the here and now, and you're living life, finally. Because living in the future, well, that leads only to dying. So you guys, yeah, let's see what we can do with this thing. I'm ready for a change, my friends. I'm not looking to go backwards. I'm looking to go forwards. And I want to see all of us just moving forward. And it doesn't require us outlining the plan or detailing any new form of government or any of these things. All of these things are unnecessary. You are in the hands of God. And I know what that word does to you. But there is more to this third dimensional reality than most of us are willing to accept. And my life, I hope, is a prime example of the miraculous, loving, living nature that we live in. So until next week, hey, be good and change things. Let's give move to change. It's all in your head. Loving you all. Talk to you soon.